tune for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview with Tara Connor Jones. Tara is part of the ensemble company of West Coast Black Theater Troupe's production of The Cotton Club Revue, which will open on Friday, July 10th. Tara's story is interesting. Tara was led, apparently, to this career of singing, performing, acting, but also she was interrupted from this career. Listen to this lovely, charming, sensitive woman talk about why she feels so blessed and so compelled to, quote, give back to God the gift that God gave her, the gift of that extraordinary voice and capacity to impact an audience. In addition to Tara's interview, today I am playing two excerpts from the cabaret performance of Ira Lee Collins. I was lucky enough to see this cabaret performance when I was in New York a couple of weeks ago. And I interviewed Ira, but to my horror, the interview has somehow disappeared. I was able to get, however, pieces of that performance. And they are particularly poignant for me because Ira calls his cabaret performance that of the gay geezer. This funny, wise, talented, nearly octogenarian human being singing about his life and his struggle with his ability to accept and embrace his being gay. This seems to me a particularly poignant moment in time to play these pieces of Ira Lee's performance. So you will hear a section of Ira Lee's performance followed by my interview with Tara Connor Jones. Hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh, I really can't.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. Not the person other people think you should be. Not even the person you think you should be. Unfortunately, too many of us grow up in situations, either in our family of origin, in the wider culture we grow up in our religion, or with our peers, in which we are discouraged from being the person we really are, because that person somehow doesn't fit with the idea that our family or our culture or our teacher or our siblings or our peers think is who we should be. And unfortunately, we are unable to fight that as children. And so many of us grow up at odds with who we really are, ashamed of who we really are. And many of us learn how to pretend that we're not that, and then even to forget who we really are in an attempt to be the person other people will want, appreciate, hire, love. So The Lynn Show is about making this point, saying, if this happened to you, if you know that you hid an aspect of yourself, if you know that there was something that you yearned for, thought about, dreamt about, but are unable to access in your current life, I believe that it's not too late. As a psychotherapist, I have seen over and over and over people who have put aside, buried, hid, or denied aspects of themselves who are able to recover significant portions of what they have hidden. So The Lynn Show is about saying, if this happened to you, you too may be able to recover who you really are and live a life that feels, as we psychotherapists say, more congruent. If you want more information about this, you can go to my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And up there you can get a copy of my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. Obviously about why it's difficult to make changes in your life and what we can actually do to make those changes. You can listen to all of the podcasts of all of the shows I've ever done, including the one I'm about to play. In this show, I am playing pieces of Ira Lee Collins' The Gay Geezers cabaret performance. And this is, of course, particularly appropriate at this time because the Supreme Court has just issued their landmark decision to make gay marriage legal in all of the states, including the 14, in which up until now it was not legal. Ira is remarkable. As I say in the lead-in, he's about to be 80, and his show is interesting, charming, funny, compelling, as is he. So I'm going to play a section of that show, and then I'm going to play my interview with Tara Connor Jones, whose story is equally appropriate to this theme, because as a very little girl, Tara was asked to sing a solo at church. She didn't think she had a good voice. She was shy and frightened. But the experience of seeing the impact that her voice and her singing had on that congregation changed her life and let her know who she really is. This is not a simple, straightforward journey for Tara, but it does wind up in the right place. So hang on. Hear first Ira Lee Collins, followed by my interview with Tara Connor Jones.
I came from a small town, and the name-calling started in my teenage years. They needed me to be on the basketball team and the baseball team, even though I didn't have any athletic skills. So, when I became a sophomore, I decided that I would be a better cheerleader than a ball player. And to the chagrin of the teachers, especially Coach Waldo, the student body voted me to be cheerleader. I was the only male cheerleader ever from Kingsbury High School. I can say that now because the school's been torn down for 30 years. We would travel from school to school for the basketball games, and when we would get up to do cheers, two girls and myself, get out of the floor to do our cheers, then the name calling started. The first one I remember was queer bait. Now, I didn't exactly know what it meant, but I knew it wasn't about trout fishing. I was like the Polish lesbian who liked men. I liked girls. What else was there? And even when I got up enough nerve to kiss a local girl and she said, "Kissing you is like kissing another girl," I still like girls. Then, one day, my oldest sister June brought home a True Confession magazine. And on the cover was a picture of this gorgeous, blonde, blue-eyed guy with a caption at the bottom that read, "Women, be warned. Do not marry this man. He may be a homosexual." I remember looking at the picture and thinking, what's not to like? So, when I moved to Chicago to study at the Goodman Theater, I kissed my first man. I felt a tingle from the top of my head right down to the tips of my toes, and I knew I was home free.
Stand well back, I'm coming through. Nothing can stop me now. Watch out, world, I'm warning you. Nothing can stop me now. Now I know that there is a promised land. I'm gonna find it and all. Hope is high and I'm gonna cling to it. Tie every string to it. Give everything to it. I'll make all my dreams come true before my final bow. How I'll do it, who can say? But I know I will someday. Watch out, world, I'm on my way. Nothing can stop me now. I shall find success today. Nothing can stop me now. Yesterday was yesterday. Nothing can stop me now. Now I know the future is mine to have. I'm hereby taking a vow. From now on I'm gonna begin again. Stick out my chins again. Go out and win again. Get you gone, you sky of gray. Farewell, you furrowed brow. Now my future's crystal clear. No more woe for me to fear. I'm gonna stand this world up on its ear. And I'll succeed somehow. I'd walk a million miles for one of your smiles. Nothing can stop me. Nothing can stop me. Nothing can stop me. No, no, no. No.
Okay, so I'm here with Tara Connor Jones in the little office at the West Coast Black Theater Troupe offices.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to Tara because she's here performing in the Cotton Club Revue.
The Cotton Club Cabaret.
The Cotton Club Cabaret,
yes.
Right, which will open on
July 8th.
July 8th.
Is our opening. First preview,
mm-hmm.
And it will run until the 9th of August.
The 9th of August. Okay, good. So, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Oh, wow.
Well, you're smiling. It's clearly you.
It is.
It's clearly you. Right, right, right. And I only ask one question, and that is, well, let me back up just a little. The art to which you are giving your life is performing, acting, singing? Well, how you would define it's, yourself?
It's a combination of all those things. I guess I would consider myself an entertainer.
An entertainer.
I sing, I act, I move well. I won't consider myself a dancer, but I move well. I do a bit of film. I've dabbled in that last year, and that was a load of fun. I minister at churches through singing as well as the spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're
a variety of
right.
Things.
Yeah. So you're on stage a lot.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Good. So I only ask one question, and this is it. Do you remember the very first moment in your life when entertaining in whatever way seemed to call you, draw you?
Yes.
Be attractive, right?
I would say I was about 11
mm-hmm.
or 12 years old. I attended a small Baptist church, and we received a new pastor. And he was very young and handsome, and all of us little girls were falling over our new pastor. And I remember he drove a Monte Carlo.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was, it was a Regal.
Oh.
And it was just fabulous. And we hadn't seen a pastor drive a Regal. Young and fancy.
He,
and
you might say, was Regal.
Yeah, exactly. And I was singing in the Sunshine Choir like everyone else just because I was told to, not because I thought I could sing. And he heard me one Sunday and thought I had a gift. He was a wonderful singer himself, still is. And we had a program. He gave me a solo. It was the hymn, Give Me a Clean Heart.
Mm.
I was so afraid, and I got up in front of the church, and while singing the song, I noticed the response of the audience. And it was the most incredible feeling, and I knew from that day that I was supposed to sing. I was supposed to share this with someone, because if it made people feel that way, even as a little girl, I knew that this is what I'm supposed to do.
Wow. Okay, and you're
that's
saying,
where it started.
You're saying you were 12 or 13?
11 or 12.
11 or 12, right. I got that wrong. What's so interesting to me about this is that it wasn't the singing, because you were already singing and that mm-hmm. hadn't captured you. It was the recognition that you had an impact.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
I saw people weep.
My goodness.
I saw pride in my grandmother's face. My grandmother was a fabulous singer. And I thought, oh my God.
Literally, right?
And I knew, without really knowing what it actually meant to have an impact, because I was a little girl.
Right.
And little girls were different then.
Mm-hmm.
11 was different then than it is now.
It was a lot younger.
I was truly naive,
yeah,
I guess you would say. I just knew that something happened.
Yes.
And it was something that was different.
Well, and you remember it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you were little and it was a long time ago, but you can still, when you talk about it, you can still see that in a sense, you're reliving it, right?
My mom kept the cassette tape for years.
Wow.
Notice cassette tape.
Yeah.
Who has them anymore?
Yeah, she couldn't play it anymore anyway, even if she had
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right.
So that was truly amazing. And from that moment, I started singing more in the school chorus.
Well, this is my next question. So did you think to yourself, well, I want to do a little more of this, so mm-hmm. you signed up for chorus, or you...
I did. I signed up for chorus.
Right.
just as a dibble and dabble.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting into junior high school. Never forget a teacher named Ann Chapman. I don't even know if she's still out there. I was in the ninth grade, junior high school, and we were singing a piece. Don't remember what it was, but I sang the wrong note. And she stopped everybody and said, "Who did that?" And of course, I thought, "Well, I'm not saying a thing. I don't even know what I did." And she says, "Who did that?" And so after a while, everybody pointed at me because she was very serious.
Right.
And she says, "Do that again." And I was like, "Do what?" She said, "Hit that high C again." And I did. And she said, "Oh, my God." And so she started to mentor me a bit after that. Because she felt like if you have that kind of range in the ninth grade.
Right. Without trying.
Right.
Right.
She says, let me help you. So she did. And I ended up getting into the art school for high school.
How did she help you?
We had after-school rehearsals.
Oh, she really worked with you.
She really did.
She worked with you by yourself?
By myself after school. Oh. She gave me more solo parts. Her thing at the time was she started giving me a lot of the spirituals because she felt like I had a Jesse Norman voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what she started mentoring me with. She would say, "Well, I want you to learn this music." And she would teach it to me and we would perfect it. And I never sang publicly with it that I can remember, but she just took time enhancing what she thought was already there.
Okay, I want to stop just to make this point. I always do when it comes up like this, the significance of teachers. You know, I hear story after story of kids who had no idea they had talent, who maybe were so shy they couldn't talk, but a teacher saw something and commented on it and drew it out, and now they have a life based on that, you know. So I always want to make that point. And in your case, you had the pastor, then you had the teacher. You just had a lot of people saying, "You," you know.
And those teachers followed me.
Really?
When I say those teachers followed me, everywhere I went, there was a teacher or a principal that poured into me. It was a principal in high school. She's deceased now, Mary Frances Whitaker.
How did she find you?
She was the principal of the art school.
Okay, we learned on. I jumped ahead. So are you saying, thank you. Are you saying that... It was special to get into the art school that you had?
Yes.
To, right, yeah, I missed that entirely.
We had to audition. It was similar to Fame.
Yes.
Auditioned.
So this is what you said, Ann Chapman, is that what you said her name was?
Chapman, yes.
Yeah, so she was grooming you to get into the art school.
I didn't know it at the time, but absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I used some of that material for my audition. I didn't know how big of a thing it was then because that was the first year. It was 1986 was the year it opened.
Oh, my goodness.
And, I just may have told my age a bit. But that's the year it opened. So I auditioned. I got in as a 10th grader. The principal, Mary Frances Whitaker, fabulous lyrical soprano, who was a lover of the arts as well as an educator. And she heard me and asked me to come to take music lessons. She provided music lessons at First Baptist Church downtown in Jacksonville.
Now, are we talking here about singing or are we talking about theory? And no,
singing.
Right, just singing. Right.
And
everybody wants to teach you.
Yeah. And I didn't have the money, and my mother didn't have the money. My mom was a registered nurse, and it was just she and I. She worked double shifts to make sure I had absolutely everything a daughter could want. But that was...
More than she could do.
Right. And I remember, I'm about to cry, because that was special. I remember Miss Whitaker saying, "Just get her to the church. You don't have to pay me a dime."
I'm crying.
Because I feel like she has a real talent that can be brought out with help.
Yeah.
And I went to her, I want to say every Thursday at 6. And I would rehearse with Miss Whitaker from around 6 to 7:30 every week. She would work with me. She would help me on technique. She would do exercises to extend my range. She did everything I would have had I gone to a music teacher.
That's right. Absolutely.
She introduced me to other great people in music. Dr. William Brown, he is deceased also, but he was a premier opera singer who ended up teaching and doing work at the University of North Florida many, many years ago. And I ended up working with him and had an opportunity to sing with him.
Because she introduced you to him?
Mm-hmm. My goodness. They had sang together years ago.
This is really a you are being led thing, right?
My steps have been ordered by God from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's really what it sounds like.
And the funny thing about that is I'm learning as I mature, you don't realize that until you get older.
Yeah, and you look back.
Exactly.
And you see how it went, right. No, you were just following. You were just going with what was next, right?
With what was next.
Okay, so at any point here in junior high school, in art school, did you think, I'm making a life of this?
It was always my plan to make a life of this.
Okay, so you knew all along that this was what you wanted.
All along I knew this was what I wanted. I just knew. It was like I had been bitten by the bug. I did my first show at 16.
In school?
It was actually outside of school. It was at a theater called River City Playhouse in Jacksonville. The theater doesn't exist anymore, but they did Ain't Misbehavin'.
Oh.
And I remember being afraid because everyone else in the cast were 20 and older.
Well, wait a minute. You auditioned for it.
Mm-hmm.
What made you audition for it?
Somebody mentioned it. I want to say there was a flyer going around the school, and somebody said, you should audition. And I had never auditioned.
I was just going to say,
auditioning for the school.
Right.
And I went. I don't remember what I sang or anything, but I got the part. It was that summer. I was 16.
Oh, my God.
And I remember I played the character Amelia, and one of her songs is Squeeze Me.
Oh, oh, I remember, goodness.
Yeah. Being embarrassed.
Oh my goodness, you were so young for that.
Singing that with my mother in the
audience. Yeah, right.
So I keep telling people what I would do to play that role again. I could really sing that now.
Right, right. Well, you could know what it meant now.
Right.
Right, right, right.
So I've always known. I ended up getting out of high school. I wanted to go straight to New York City. My mother, who did what I think parents from her era knew to do, and that was you get a career, you get a college education.
Right, you got to back something to fall back on.
And that was her point. She said, you need to get a college education, because what if your voice doesn't work one day? You still have to eat. You still have to take care of yourself.
Right.
And so I decided, can't be that hard. I'll go for education. And I ended up getting a degree in elementary education.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught.
Mm-hmm.
For 19 years.
Really?
I did theater on the side all those 19 years. My plan was, okay, well, to satisfy my mom, do this for 7 years. It's my plan B. It was like, just do it for 7 years. 7 years turned into 19. Last year was my final assignment.
Oh my goodness.
And let me tell you this. I mean, I hate to say her name, but I don't mind. Fall of 2013, a friend, a dear sister of mine, Angela Robinson, who shows on Tyler Perry's, one of his shows,
mm-hmm.
Weekly now, she sent me a text message and said, the Alhambra is doing The Color Purple. That's my home theater. It's a dinner theater in Jacksonville.
So are you saying you've worked there before?
I'm saying now, yes.
Yeah, okay.
From that text message.
Oh, you never had worked there?
Never had worked there. I didn't think I was, like, good enough to work there. They had, like, big people from New York. I worked at community theater.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you should go for the audition. I'm going to call Todd, who's the director, and ask him if he will hear you.
So yet again, said, right?
Yet again, a text message.
Yeah, right.
And I tell her all the time, one text message started all of this.
Changed your life.
Changed my life.
Yeah.
I went for the audition. Todd, who I affectionately call Pops now, lost it. after the audition, and he said, for heaven's sake,
where have you been? I knew it.
Have you been in Jacksonville all this time? Why haven't I heard of you? And he ended up casting me in The Color Purple. That was my first professional show at the professional theater, which happened of March of 2014.
Oh my God. And yet again, you're not planning this.
Nope.
No.
I really went to the audition because I did not want to let my friend down.
Right, right.
She had put her name out there.
Right.
She had made a call to him. I thought to myself, I can't not go.
Right.
I have to go to the audition. And I have to do reasonably well so that it's not
She's not embarrassed. Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. He hired me. He gave me in the one run of that show such an amazing acting class, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you never had any acting. You didn't study acting in college.
Did not. He would say things to me like, you have an amazing set of chops, kid.
You need to learn some technique.
Right. And he even felt like I had a lot of natural ability.
Right.
He says, but I can help you. And he would tweak here and he would tweak there. And by the time it was done, it was wonderful. Then he hired me for the next show, which was Shrek the Musical. He told me, he says, now I'm going to tell you, you're going to work your butt off. I was three characters. I was Mama Ogre, Mama Bear, and Dragon. And for that show, which happened last summer, he offered my equity card as a part of my contract.
Oh, my God.
I was ending up the school year during all of this. Mind you, I worked. The Color Purple, we did 8 shows a week.
Yay!
2 shows on Saturday, 2 shows on Sunday, and then Tuesday through Friday. And I was still working every day from 7:50 until 4, 5 o'clock.
Run into the theater.
Right. And then heading to the theater.
Grab something to eat, run to the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those voice lessons then must have stood you in good stead, because it's hard to do 8 shows.
It is. It's very hard. You have to definitely pace yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I did Shrek, we were into the summer, and I had made the decision. Kind of sat back and looked at everything, and I said, you know, I feel like this is God. I feel like there's a light flashing saying, this is the time to go.
Yeah.
Take the leap. And all of my friends kept telling me, you should leap.
Yeah.
Because you're really good. And if it doesn't work,
so
you can always come back to teaching. You have a valid certificate.
Right.
You'll never know if you don't try it. You should do it.
Wow.
And I turned in my letter of resignation.
Holy cow.
And scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Todd saying to me, quote, you have a set of balls. But I believe you can work.
Wow.
He says, I believe you can work as much as you want to work.
Oh, my God.
And I have not stopped working. It's the most amazing thing. I've had maybe 3 months that I did not have a show.
Jesus. Well, you probably needed those 3 months.
So it has been amazing. It has been an amazing journey. It has been a testament of faith.
Yes.
It has been lessons learned. One of the biggest lessons I've learned is that God will take care of you.
If you let.
Yeah.
If you trust, right?
Trust and relax.
Right.
And I work on that daily.
Well,
just relaxing.
Yeah, well, because...
You make me cry.
You make me cry. Are you kidding? The conventional wisdom, what the culture tells us is not to trust, mm-hmm. you know, to be scared, to be vigilant,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So you have an interesting conundrum. You know, you have your history, which just is loaded with, what, are you going to trust? I mean, here I'm here, and I'm here, and I'm here, and, you know, and every place you go, somebody comes in to help you, push you, direct you, encourage you, right? But then you have, on the other hand, the conventional wisdom, which is, are you crazy?
Exactly. Because I thought to myself, maybe I'm having a midlife crisis.
Right.
Like, I should ask my friends, am I having a midlife crisis? They're like, absolutely not. This is what you were born to do, nut. I'm like, are you sure? Like, because I think you don't know if you're crazy, but your friends can tell. They're like, heck no, go.
Wow.
And then and that brought me to Sarasota.
Oh, tell me.
I saw auditions posted on the website. I had heard about Nate Jacobs probably for the last 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend who said, I'm going to try and put you in touch with him. Never happened. So when I saw it pop up, I thought, oh my gosh, I have to go.
Mm-hmm.
Made a phone call. It's another one of those moments. Made a phone call, got my audition time. At the time, I was in that transition. I was in that moment where I felt like, maybe this wasn't the best idea. I don't even know where I'm going to stay. I don't even have the money to get a hotel room. So I put out I started making some calls from college people that maybe are in this area that I could just stay the night with. And one of those friends said to me, you know, I'm supposed to help you on this leg of the journey.
Oh, my God.
She says, I'll call you later with a confirmation number. She bought me a hotel room.
My goodness.
She got me a hotel
room.
Right. So I came here for the audition, stayed the night, drove back to Jacksonville the next day, ended up getting hired for Black Nativity
here. Oh, my goodness.
Last Christmas. What a gift it was for my first professional show on the road. I got to play the Archangel Gabriel and announce the news that a savior is born.
Oh, my God.
And I'm thinking, what could be better than this? And now I'm back.
Yeah, from the sublime to the to the Cotton Club.
To the Cotton Club, exactly.
Right.
Mr. Jacobs has been a gift.
Mm-hmm.
He is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell him all the time that none of this is new, that he would hear it. He is a divine connection for mm-hmm. me. And I know that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Wow.
Like, I know it here. I can't always express how I know it. But I know that Sarasota is exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be under his tutelage right now.
Wow.
I'm
well, he's the next.
Learn from him.
He's the next in line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, he's just the next in line.
Yeah.
You've had a series here of you know, you're just
amazing
leaving.
Teachers.
You
yeah.
have had a series of amazing teachers. It's true. So, well, they're putting you up now, right? When they put
yes.
you up, when you come, right? Okay, good. I'm not worried about you, right? Okay, so. So are you planning to settle here for a while, or do you know, or?
I don't know right now.
So you still have a place in Jacksonville?
Still have a
you
place
still,
in
right?
Jacksonville.
Okay.
And
a life there. I mean, friends and...
Yeah,
yeah right?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer have my mother. So that...
So you're not locked in anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, I know. So
I couldn't think of a better way to say that.
Right.
This is that moment in my life where I feel if there's ever a moment to fly and to fly far away from home.
Yeah. And just have your own roots.
Right.
Wherever, right?
So what I've said to people is...
Let me know.
Yeah, I feel like maybe this time next year, I'm not sure. I just have a feeling that I will be putting roots down somewhere else.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know.
Well, I don't think you have to know.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that what's supposed to happen for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's been your experience, right?
Absolutely.
And it's what I said before about the difficulty between trusting that, even though that's been your experience, and the conventional wisdom, which is, you know, you better figure it out yourself. You know, it's
which is what I struggle with.
Not only you.
Yeah.
I think not very many people... Well, maybe that's not true because I've heard the story a lot because I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and a lot of them have had similar experiences of being led, of being helped, of being, right? But I think in the general population, most people don't have this experience. They have the conventional wisdom which is you better figure it out. But they don't have what you have on the other side, which is, I didn't figure it out. You know, it got figured out for me.
Right.
Right. So it's more complicated or difficult for somebody like you, because you got both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a war.
There's a war, yeah. Right. So those people who just have you better be vigilant, they're, you know, it's not as much fun, I think, but they're not conflicted.
So I had the thought yesterday, just thinking ahead, because that's sort of what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I go a year out, which is not always good for someone like me, who also has the, don't worry about it, it's going to work out.
Right.
Yeah, so I was looking ahead thinking, so how am I going to do this then? And I started to be worked up about it, and just as quickly as I got worked up, I could hear the voice saying, why are you worrying about that? Have I ever,
failed you?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, I know.
And so I took a deep breath and said, all right.
And anyway, all you have to think about is what you're doing in the Cotton Club Cabaret.
Exactly.
That's what's up for you.
Right.
So what songs are you singing?
Oh, my gosh. My favorite one is One Scotch, One Bourbon, One Beer.
Oh, my.
I absolutely love it. My character name, I chose a character name. I love creating characters. Is Della Mae Jackson.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they call me Della Mae at the club. So I can really see Della Mae singing about one scotch, one bourbon, and one beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's during that time of prohibition when liquor was illegal.
Right.
And so this is the conversation happening as you lead up to that song.
Mm-hmm.
And so my character, Della, basically says, whatever.
Right.
Whatever about not having liquor in the club. Give me a scotch, a bourbon, and
a beer.
Right. And so she sings about that and talks about in the song how she's not going to cause any trouble. So have no fear. She just wants her drink.
Right.
So that's one of them. And then there's a very comical song that I do with another castmate, Charles Lattimore, that's called You Ain't Got It No More.
Oh.
And it's between a lover, I guess it's a husband and wife,
mm-hmm.
basically saying,
sorry, honey.
Right. You don't have it no more. You're all shot.
Yeah, right.
You know, your motor is shot. Your rear end is shot. You ain't got it no more. It's hilarious. And there's another one. I have lots of songs with my lovers.
Mm-hmm.
This is with a different lover. And it's called Lost It.
It's all right.
So I'm going to look for it very quickly.
Because you cleverly got it.
Yeah, I take my script everywhere.
Yeah, and I'm going to take all of this out so you don't have to worry. So when you say it, it's going to just follow by what you said.
Okay, great.
Don't rush. We're not in trouble.
Oh, well, that's not that one, but another one I have is, oh, yeah, that's it. I Don't Dig You, Jack.
You're just turning these guys right and left, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's basically I found out that he's been tipping out.
Uh-huh.
And not only has he been tipping out, but he's on my dime. And so I finally found out, and I'm waiting for him when he gets home, tipping in.
I see.
And I started basically telling him, I don't dig you, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, this is supposed to be a partnership, and you slipped off.
Well, so you got all these strong women.
Right.
You know?
Then I get to sing Vote for Mr. Rhythm. This is a bit of information I learned through our music director, who the song is actually talking about. In the song, I say, you know, vote for Chick Webb.
Oh.
And,
right.
Of course, we found out that Chick Webb was one of the most famous percussionists,
yes,
drummers in
mm-hmm.
Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And what this song was about was they used to have, like, the Battle of Drummers. And it was like this drummer and another drummer from another area. And they're basically saying, vote for Mr. Rhythm. Vote for Chick Webb.
Uh-huh.
Right, that's who our vote is for.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's our drummer.
He's our, yeah, right. You did The Color Purple in 2014? That was last year.
Yes.
Good grief.
Last year.
So what have you done in between then beside this?
I've done The Color Purple, Shrek the Musical, Black Nativity.
Mm-hmm.
The Buddy Holly story.
Really? Where'd you do that?
In Jacksonville,
mm-hmm.
at the Alhambra. It was the Apollo performer, but I named myself Gussie Pearl Peacock, known as Big Pearl, at at the Apollo.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a load of fun. Love the pictures because, you know, you had the beehives and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then back here for the Cotton Club.
Unbelievable.
So after Buddy Holly ended in February, that was my 3-month stretch.
Right.
Where I substitute teach between shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Yeah, mommy was right.
Right? Exactly. And I have so many friends that are teachers.
Right.
Until they keep me on their rotating
list. Yes,
so
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
I always have someone to work.
Yeah, but yet again, right?
Yet again.
You're just taken care of. You're just taken care of. It's amazing. Okay, so I usually ask people, you know, generally when I'm interviewing people who are performing in town, they've been doing it all their lives. So I get to ask them, you know, having done this all your life, what does this feel like? But your life is so interesting. I mean, you have this beginning where you clearly know this is yours. And then you have this, 19-year interruption, right? And then you have really the balls, forgive me, for, you know, to embrace it again.
But in a sense, I've been doing it all the time.
Yeah, actually, I forgot that, and I meant to ask you. You said you were doing theater while you were teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So you really were. So and you also said that you were doing community theater. So is that what you meant?
Yeah. I'd love to give them plugs.
Yeah.
I did great community theater with Stage Aurora in Jacksonville, Darryl Hall, who I consider a mentor. I did great theater with the Five and Dime in Jacksonville. Lee Hamby is my sweetheart. I consider him a mentor also. I did great work with Atlantic Beach Experimental Theater and Carol Butterly in Jacksonville, Florida. She's an amazing director, great work. I know I'm missing some other theaters, but I've worked with many community theaters.
What's also interesting about that, you know, when you said that you did this thing at the Alhambra and he tweaked your acting and you hadn't had acting, but that's not true. You've had all those directors
right.
were acting teachers.
Exactly.
So you had a 19-year off and on acting training, essentially, you know? Okay, so having given all this time to this work, which you really have, even while you were working a day gig, right?
Yeah, because my students were my audience.
Oh, God, that's right.
And that's the days that it was hard to go, that's how I viewed them. And I felt like I was on stage every day, and I was very animated. They all loved me because I was over the top crazy.
Because you're a performer.
Right.
That's right.
We would sing. It was an experience.
Well, it was more of the same. It was just a different kind of venue.
Right.
Right? Okay. So what would you say about a life that's essentially dedicated to having an impact on an audience, because that's what your life essentially seems to me, through singing and performing and acting and moving well.
I think it's the ultimate gift I can offer back to God.
Ah, yes, right.
I put a quote on Facebook a year ago or so, but I put it up again the other day, where it came to me one night that I think the greatest act of worship is when you give back to God what he gave to you, and he can watch you do what he created you to do.
Wow.
I think that is the ultimate for me. Every night I take the stage, I feel like I'm saying, God, see, this is what you gave me. I offer it back.
Oh, my God.
I hope you enjoy it. I hope it makes you happy. As happy to watch it as it did for you to put it inside of me. That's genuinely what I feel inside. I feel like this is my life's work.
Yes.
It's my passion. It's what I was created to do. I know it with every fiber of my being.
This is a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much, Dara.
Thank you.
It was lovely. This is my life's work. It is my passion. It is what I was created to do. Is there a better definition for this is who I am? And when you listen to Tara, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. This
is a woman who knew from the moment she stood up in front of that congregation and looked at the impact that her singing had on those human beings that mattered so much to her, that she knew who she was and what she needed to do. And even when she was not using that God-given voice to sing, she was using her need to have an impact on the children who she taught. So, as I say all the time, it is my hope that when you listen to people like Tara, you hear not only what it sounds like to be who you really are, but something that I hope inspires you to ask yourself, is this how I feel about my work, about my life? Am I doing what I was created to do? Am I living my passion? And if the answer to that is no, then please think about the possibility of having that in your life. You hear Tara saying that really rather late in life she comes back around to it. It is not too late. So, again, it is my hope that listening to Tara and listening to my show gives you that permission, the permission to ask, can I be more of who I am? And so I hope that this has not only inspired you to look into your own heart, but to come on down to see the Cotton Club Cabaret and see what it looks like when you're really who you really are at the West Coast Black Theater Troupe's production of the Cotton Club Cabaret, which opens on July 10th and has previews, I believe, on the 9th. And you can get information about that by calling the West Coast Black Theater Troupe office. So, we're going to go out on another of the pieces from Ira Lee Collins' cabaret performance of The Gay Geezer. And, of course, one cannot have a better role model for the who I am than Ira Lee Collins, another amazing example of being who you really are, and that it is never too late to be who you really are. And if you are intrigued by Ira Lee and want to have more information about him and where he's doing his performances, you can get that information by going to Susan L. Shulman's website, that is www.shulmanpublicity.com, or calling her at 212-921-4344. We're going to go out on an Ira Lee singing No Matter What Happens. And as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that inspired you. Something that made you laugh. Something even that made you weep. But something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week. Same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
I wanted the shadows. I don't anymore. No matter what happens, I won't anymore. I've run from the sunlight, afraid it saw too much. The moon had the one light I bathed in, I walked in, I held in my feelings and closed every door. No matter what happens, I can't anymore. There's someone who must hear the words I've never spoken. Tonight, now you are here. My silence can be broken. I need you to touch me, to know the love that's in my heart, the same heart that tells me to see myself, to free myself, to
For two mornings, the curtains were drawn. It's time they open to welcome the dawn. A voice deep inside me is getting stronger. I can't keep it silent any longer. No matter what happens, it won't be the same anymore.
Gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. Chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't all. Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten